And now, as promised, a few more minutes of bonus material with Dr. Eric White talking about his avant-garde and speculative technologies, or AGAST, project.
Right at the end of the book, you kind of talk in a way that sort of encapsulates, I guess, what you've just been saying when you talk about how the task of the technobathetic avant-garde has been to propose an intermediary stage of disaggregation before alternative narratives can gain traction in the public sphere. So that kind of implies that actually some of those strategies, those kind of pathetic strategies they've been suggesting or employing in their own work, haven't necessarily kind of been sort of diffused, I suppose, into kind of culture, into modern life yet. And yet you're also kind of suggesting there might be a point, I guess, at which they might be actually adopted and then challenging some of those kind of orthodoxies or suggesting ways of cultural improvement, cultural kind of development and kind of emancipation and the kind of empowerment of different communities that you've kind of been mentioning as well. I'm interested in how those ideas then actually seem quite seamlessly to link to your own kind of projects of, kind of, I suppose, real world projects with the AGAST projects, in particular the avant-garde and speculative technology project, sort of based at Brooks with various different collaborators, where you've been kind of retro-engineering some of these inventions, which either did work or were kind of speculated about, you know, being something that could work and could empower people. So how do those kind of, if you like, those kind of maybe slightly more abstract big ideas, concepts, link in with the kind of physical production of these technologies that you've been retro-engineering?
The initial idea was, well, I don't know how we can rise to that challenge, but let's try and imagine some of these technologies and let's see if they have valence. And one of the ways I've done that, I mentioned previously the EOF Hackspace and Oxford Cedar County Library Makerspace, building a reading machine and actually going back and fabricating something. That actually was midway in the process doing that. Where we started was actually reimagining old technologies designed by avant-garde with new technology, with augmented reality. Why augmented? Well, augmented creates a ligature between digital animation in the virtual space and real-time views of the real world. And it's glitchy, it's messy, especially the first one that we created, which was an installation called Track, which we reimagined futurist noise intoners using cardboard headset and a smartphone and spatial audio. We had little tag markers that would create these sort of 3D animations that you could interact with and create these extraordinary sounds with. And that was to sort of explore the technicity, really, to explore how ludic, playful ideas about interacting with technology could make serious points about how do we imagine the future of our city. So we used, instead of sounds of engines and sirens and things like that, we used the sounds of data routers and wind turbines, you know, and various, you know, sort of electric cars and things like that. The reading machine continued that AR. So we had one point where we're retro-engineering this technology and reading about Bob Brown's ideas, which looked like augmented reality, actually. He was very conversant with ideas of hands-free controls, hands-free interfaces through the theremin, which is a hands-free synthesizer that you'll wave your hand in front of. He was familiar with television, and he wrote a teleplay that imagined manipulating electronic text or animated kind of representations of electronic text with his bare hands. And so this sort of said, okay, well, we have that technology now. Let's see what we can do with it. And I was extremely privileged to work with award-winning poet Jay Bernard to imagine what this kind of idea about interactive text and using interactive texts to challenge ideas about normativity, challenging socio-technical power relations. If you look into the Code of Unbody, which is this extraordinary exhibition where you have images of Jay triggering animations of them, in one case jumping, in other cases a sort of rocking an imaginary child, in other cases turning around and moving around in space, in other cases producing streams of poetry along the lines of the reading machine, and the most recent iteration, a kind of column-like arrangement of texts, which kind of is in constant dialogue and constant shifting with scans of Jay and then sort of disassembling and reassembling as these animations. So how is this technobathetic? How is this kind of continuing this technicity that I'm arguing for? Well, I think what it's doing is it's challenging artists and writers and humanities scholars to engage in the process of technological production and negotiating with computer scientists, including Friedel and Wild, digital media producers and artists such as John Pycross, and the whole raft of incredible contributors, Lawrence Marshall, for example, and programmers and artists who have brought together their work to produce this incredible interactive installation. And it's about finding a language. It's about that intermediary stage that these writers were talking about reimagining what we're doing with text and technology, and having it not always be a comfortable match, but finding a really powerful intervention. And in the case of Unbody is really an articulation and journey through identitarian complexes that are mediated through technology. Our digital selves and our quotidian day-to-day lives contain multiplicities, but there's still an ethical challenge of identifying an ethical core to that, a way of holding us accountable for the technologies that we interact with. So augmented reality is really useful here because you're always tethered to the real world around you. And even in, you know, it's a HoloLens exhibition in Unbody, now it's also a tablet exhibition as well. But even through the HoloLens, it's not perfect. It's not a glossy world. You know, it is imperfect. It's glitchy. And that's brilliant because it keeps you constantly tethered to your immediate situation. And if you look into the code of Unbody, that's when you start to see the really socio-technical critique that Bernard has so brilliantly crafted, a kind of narrative that evolves when you go through the sequence of the code that you don't experience actually when you're in the space, or if you do experience it, it's in a very lateral sort of way, in which they're dismantling the kind of the assumptions by which we're categorized, where we're reduced from bodies to kind of digital units by these many kind of corporate entities in the digital sphere. This is particularly pressing when we're thinking about the metaverse and the ways in which virtual interactions and kind of real-time interactions in the virtual sphere are going to be codified and commodified. And Jay's brilliant because they're kind of dismantling this idea that we're passive victims of this. It's like, have you known what the implications of your choices are and continue doing it anyway? It's not a kind of straightforward dismissal of this architecture or a kind of reinstatement of the narrative of the technological sublime, which says they are out there and we are over here, and we have to resist this at all costs. That's a servile relationship. What Jay's proposing is an active and engaged one in which we're constantly interrogating the costs behind the possibilities and multiplicities of this digital space. And that's really what the AGASC project is doing. It's attempting to reset a socio-technical engagement in which, you know, we're the passive consumers of technology. It's sort of saying we have this extraordinary body of technological literacy amongst everyone. So can we find ways of using it? And one of my collaborations with Oxfordshire County Libraries is to produce a platform where you can do that. You can take 360-degree photos, upload it to the app, and write your own stories over it, producing a really powerful virtual reality experience in under 2 hours with no knowledge. But at the same time, you're picking up, through this incidental learning process, coding skills. You know, we call it intercoding, so it's not the sole object of this, but you're picking up things that will translate to other coding platforms while focusing on producing this wonderful story. And that's a byproduct of the process. But in some ways, it's a really powerful one because it's arguing that if we make these things visible, people will learn it and they will use it and they will engage if you give them a chance and if you give them these sorts of tools. So that's the ambition anyway, whether or not we can hope to compete with, you know, these sort of massive corporate entities is another story, but you got to try.